hammock, stainless steel, and frosted glass. But all of it was now ruined by the pockmarks of bullet fire and trails of savage destruction. "Firefight here," noted Martin.
"Doesn't look like much of one," said Greenhill. "New Vegans switched over to blasters years ago, just like everybody else. Don't see no return fire or blaster damage for that matter, so ain't much of a fight. More like a turkey shoot from the look of it."
All was silence as they proceeded toward a central well that had once been the power core. The old power plants on ships of that generation always required the most space. It had since been turned into a central lift and atrium at the heart of the government in hiding. Rex checked the time, 5 hours until dawn, then a day. Sundown, and it was over. Not much time left to get everything done, and his men had been up and fighting for much of the last 24 hours. The longer things dragged out, the tireder they would be. A sound echoed up from far below.
"We ain't alone in here," said McAfee.
"That's for sharp as sure," muttered Andres.
Rex peered down into the shadowy darkness. The space carved out for the old power core likely ran all the way from the very top to the very bottom of the old ship, with intermittent deck access throughout.
"What level are the labs?"
"Almost all the way down as best we could gather," said Davis. "We knew the deepest levels were where the most secretive and important work was done." Rex shook his head.
"It'll take too long for us all to get down there and get back up. I can go quicker alone if I use the armor's jump jets."
"You got rocket boosters on that thing?" McAfee asked. "Man, I always wanted to fly, you know?"
Rex ignored the artilleryman.
"How do I find the device?"
Davis bit her lip, something Rex had never seen her do. He could see she was wondering if she could trust him, and if she should. "Our intel said it was in a secure lab called Greywatch, second to last level. The project name is Telos." Rex nodded and moved to the railing that lined the vast space.
"Hold here until I get back."
"Rex," she said, holding out a hand as if to stay his jump into the darkness. "We were told there was some pretty heavy-duty security stuff down there. Something called a troll system."
"What's it do?"
"I don't know. We only ever had the name of the system. But given what we know they have invented, it's safe to say it'll be formidable." Rex studied her for a second.
"All right, then."
And then he was gone, over the railing and falling, bringing in the armor's booster jets as he descended into the darkness of the ancient ship.
Chapter 51 Rex had to flare the armor's jump jets, then bump them hard to vault under the circular walkway that girded the central well along the level next to the bottom. He scanned the darkness using the armor's radar-assisted imaging system, currently interfacing with low-light vision to produce a grainy blue-and-white image inside his helmet's HUD. Here and there lay the remains of supplies, food wrappers, medical supplies, discarded survival packs, and spent ammunition casings. The savages had been here, looking to harvest the defenders, the survivors, those men and women who had held out here for weeks, hoping to last until the other worlds could get their act together and rescue them. Obviously, they had not held long enough. The savages had broken in to continue their work of calories, which was what they'd been doing all across the planet, shopping, putting away food for their journey to the next planet. But this deck still looked to be a mess, as though the savages hadn't had the time yet to clean it up like they had at the breach site. That made Rex feel like this deck was the last stand, the place the government survivors defended at all costs. He ventured through a heavy blast door that had been blown inward. A crude map on the wall gave directions to the section he'd come seeking. Greywatch. Security access Omega Black required, noted a warning in broad lettering. Rex moved on without hesitation. The savages didn't have security access, so he'd either find the defenses defeated, or he'd find scores of dead savages. Either way, he had to move forward. But when he arrived at the entrance to Greywatch, no security access was needed. The ceramic-forged vault door with a seam down the middle slid open automatically as he approached, its security panel torn off the wall and obviously hacked. Some device hung limply from a series of spliced cables and wires that had been hard-connected to the panel. Rex looked inside the room and froze, pulse rifle ready. Not because the door had opened so easily, but because of what lay beyond it. Not just tens of savages, but hundreds. And all of them dead. These savages were the faceless cannibal marines he'd fought on the surface, their machine bodies tangled and torn, riddled by hundreds of rounds per. Their brains, the only thing left of their biological roots, exposed in sliced open helmets or sprayed in chunks on other dead marines and along the walls. A horror show. Rex stepped gingerly through the field of ruined corpse machines, head on a swivel, looking for signs of what had managed this slaughter. Inside his HUD, the targeting laser at the tip of his pulse rifle danced out and ahead, covering the dark spaces and caressing the corners as he advanced into the new Vega technology, Sanctum Sanctorum. There were fewer dead bodies farther in, as though the main fight had gone down hardcore and in earnest back by the door. Those who had made it this far had died alone, or sometimes in small groups, but just as badly. Rex suspected that the unknown troll system was responsible. The question was it still active? The space opened up to a massive lab complex and office space subdivided by high-impact safety plastic. Dozens of small labs, operating rooms, and clean rooms. And all were riddled with the spiderwebs of impact and weapon strikes that had left snowflake-reminiscent impacts in the heavy-duty partitions. It grew darker the farther into the lab Rex moved, so much so that even with his helmet he was having a hard time seeing. Now he was down to radar, which had switched him over to digitally graphed green lines of everything. Not the best imaging software to engage targets with, but better than firing blind. Keeping his weapon steady, he popped a dark flare that would emit electronic light, scratched the activation lid against the wall, and tossed it forward. The imaging software in his HUD recalibrated with the added low-spectrum light source and switched over to better imaging. Still not the best, but good enough to hunt by. Far away, in the distance behind him, he heard the distant crackle of pulse fire. The savages were engaging his team high up in the ship's central well. But there was something else within the soundscape that the armor's listening devices were picking up. A secondary audio signature, down here and close to his position. He could see its audio line at the top of his HUD. A mechanical hum, activating suddenly, then stopping, then a different one altogether. Something almost robotic. The sound of a drum whirring to life. It sounded exactly like a ship-based point defense cannon. Rex threw himself to the ground as hundreds of electrical snaps went off almost at once. Invisible bees smashed into the ruined safety partitions, spiderwebbing them even further, at points breaking through and creating crystalline geysers erupting on the horizontal plane. Maybe 1,000 rounds in 8 seconds. Then nothing. Weapons fire ceasing as instantly as it had begun. The sound of a drum whirring to life was exactly what any mounted anti-armor gun firing ball ammunition sounded like, except there should have been the singular telltale brrrrap of those infamous and ancient weapons that still found their places in the militaries of today, if only because they were so good at what they did, despite the production costs. Instead of that groaning brrrap, there had been only that low symphony of electrical snaps. There were few things that actually interested Rex, few things he took the time to know and understand, to study in depth and at length. And he'd lived a long time,
Much of what he knew faded over the years, or became obsolete. He'd seen that happen many times over. But weapons and weapon systems, he always kept up on those. Because he'd faced them in the past, he would face them in the future, and he had to survive them if he was going to do what he'd set himself to do a long time ago, which was another story for another time. Face down in the piles of machine corpses along this lane of the smashed lab, surrounded by pieces of technology that looked eerily like bodies and body parts leaking mechanical fluids in slow drips, the remains of brains putrefying in and among them, Rex searched his mind to identify the weapon system that had just snapped out 1,000 shots at him in the blink of an eye. Only the armor's advanced audio detection system and his own memory of ancient weapon systems had saved him at the last second. And now something was moving through the lab, coming toward him, coming for him, on tracks, like a small tank. He scanned memories of 1,000 different weapon systems on 100 different worlds. Could it be a Gauss gun? An electrical railgun system that fired cyclically? Whatever it was coming toward him. The troll was on its way. And now he saw it. Thermal overlays within his HUD showed him a tall, inverted triangle with two massive multi-barrel weapons forming arm-like appendages, working its way through the massive space inside the ancient starship to arrive at the target it had sensed within its designated patrol. Rex began high-crawling across the bodies of the savages. Another blur of low electrical snaps rang out, short, sharp, and hissing. More angry bees smashed into the ruined plastic partitions, even shattering some in great sheets that caved in across his path. Rex popped a frag and bounced it back in the direction from which he'd come, not to hit the sentry system, but to get it to target and fire, which it did. Both of its arms spun up with 5 heavy barrels apiece and decimated that section of the lab in a sudden blur of destruction. The air it was firing into shimmered as its very fabric was ripped apart from the effect of so many rounds passing through at relativistic speeds. Ricochets and stray rounds were rebounding and smacking into other smashed areas of the lab. The grenade went off, and Rex popped up and dumped the whole pack from the pulse rifle into the automated sentry robot, the troll, watching as his fire was harmlessly deflected and sent off in other directions. Without a pause in its firing, the robot swiveled on its creaky treads and waved its spitting destruction all across the area where Rex was standing. He had no other option, no other cover, than to activate his armor's defensive bubble, a technology that had defied his ability to understand it. It survived everything, for sometimes upwards of 45 seconds, and once, even a nuclear blast. But since then, it would also collapse without warning. So, you never knew. Rex hoped it would handle whatever the death-spitting automated sentry was throwing at him, and if it did, that was only half the battle. He still had to figure out what to do after it disappeared, without warning, as always. The wave of swarming death covered the ball of translucent defensive energy that suddenly erupted from Rex's armor. He didn't waste time. He ran deeper into the lab, the death machine hissing out its litany of angry swarming bees after him, smashing to pieces everything that stood in their way, desperate to catch up to their target. Just as he passed out of view of the troll, the bubble capriciously failed. 10 seconds, if that. Truth was, the devices inside his armor had been acting up more and more often as of late. Who knew how much longer the armor would even work, and in time, someone would invent something better. He swapped in a new charge pack as he hugged wall, then let his pulse rifle fall on its sling carry. He pulled the hand cannon and moved deeper into the ruined lab as the thing came for him, smashing barriers with volcanoes of fire. Hopefully, there wasn't a second troll active farther in. Project Telos. The project title was stamped into a door, a vault door. "Must be the place," muttered Rex. Several other such doors lined this wide, clean, vaulted section of the lab. Each had its own enigmatic project title. This must have been the hub for New Vega's most secret R&D. The big tech leaps and doomsday machines every civilization Rex had ever known eventually got around to playing with. The important stuff, or so they thought, before they started using it to annihilate one another. The machine was coming closer. Rex told the armor to call up an image off its feed of the bot. Predict weak points, last target, he growled into the armor's system commands. A replay of the last action taken against the bot spun past his eyes in a corner of the HUD. Every shot against it was calculated and graphed. Sensor overlays swam across the bot. All this was automatic. Rex had learned not to pay too much attention when the armor started its quantum voodoo. The lunatics who'd designed the thing had touched the various essence of the unknown and had come back with something that wasn't supposed to exist. Go figure. But then again, you probably shouldn't, because, as had been explained to him by a very smart woman once, that way lies madness, Rex. She always called you Rex, didn't she? Reyna. He powered up the armor's cybernetic interface to full, knowing he'd blow 25% of his available power doing what needed to be done next. But there was no time left for anything else. The killing machine was coming. He grabbed the vault wheel, ignoring the security code entry request flashing holographically on emergency reserve, and yanked with all the armor's might. The door came off its massive bolted hinges just a bit. He shifted position, still holding the hand cannon, pushed into the bent section of the vault door, and folded it away from its titanium frame. When enough of an entrance had been forced, he squeezed through. Target analysis complete, the HUD informed him. The image of the bot expanded, showing Rex where vulnerabilities in the troll might exist. Might. Optical sensors, main power plant. Both were tagged as possible targets. No sooner had Rex slipped inside than the troll revealed itself to have a few surprises of its own. Twin rockets screamed toward the vault door without warning, blowing Rex into the sidewall of the pristine clean room for the Telos project. As Rex was thrown through the air, he spotted what had to be the experimental hypercom device on a backlit pedestal at the rear of the lab. Behind another safety partition, it had to be the device, because it was illuminated reverently like some holy relic. That was the thought he had as he smashed helmet first into the wall, slamming hard to the ground and then rolling onto his back, leaning against the wall he'd just struck in a daze. A moment later, the massive form of the sentry bot, its triangular body the primal shape of all the dark devils that had ever plagued mankind, filled the now gaping vault doorway with its shadow. In Rex's HUD, the analyzed potentially vulnerable target areas were tagged. Rex raised his massive hand cannon and fired on full auto, the armor stabilizing his gauntleted aim. Powerful depleted uranium 50 caliber slugs smashed into the machine's power plant, located at the bottom of the triangle. The troll exploded, sending shards of metal and fragments of circuitry in every direction, devastating a large section of the lab and leaving a hot burning metal fragment in Rex's thigh as a parting gift. Chapter 52. After Rex went down the well inside the buried starship, Sergeant Major Andres had taken charge, setting up firing positions and getting everyone settled to wait for however long it took the colonel to come back up. Food and water were broken out and consumed in pairs, with one person watching and the other eating. It was Martin, paired up with the sergeant major and checking the dressing on his wound, who spotted movement in the green light of night vision. "Someone's coming," he whispered over comm.
"Where?"
asked Greenhill. "From the left. Corridors. Leading off the office spaces we just came through." The team hastily shifted position, reorienting itself to the newly spotted threat and watching their flanks in case it was a feint.
"I don't see nothing,"
said McAfee. Just dark.
There was some kind of electronic distortion, a blue flash of light for just a second. Martin paused, searching around the exact location he'd seen movement.
Now more of them on the right, two teams, bounding overwatch.
I see them now, said Demacia. They do not seem to see us, though, no?
What was coming, or rather who was coming, wasn't totally invisible. The team's NVGs could see the distortion of a human shape refracting light and bending it away from itself, crouched low and moving like a soldier, holding an assault rifle.
Martin nodded, though no one could have seen the motion.
Yeah, looks like a scout from each side, picking up more distortion to the rear, so there could be squads behind the points following them in.
Got 'em, said the sergeant major, coming right at us. Get ready and wait for the main body, then open up on my fire.
He got confirmed clicks as the savages moved forward in teams of two, like the shadowy images of forgotten ghosts.
They're pros, observed Martin in a whisper. That's for sure. And they move in twos like they were trained aboard ships, fighting in tight quarters.
They're savages, said Davis. All they've ever known are ships.
That was when the sergeant major opened up on them, steadying his rifle on a trash receptacle he'd turned over earlier for cover. Pulse fire raced out across the dark like hot streaks of lightning in the green wash of night vision. One of the shapes went down, and as it did, it suddenly materialized into full visibility. It was like a shrouded mummy augmented by a chassis of metal.
Some sort of cybernetic interface rig, shouted Davis as she cut loose with a burst on the team closing on the right. She thought she hit one, but she didn't get any solid knockdowns.
Captain Demacia fired, hit one, and yelled, "Got one!"
As a tanker, he was used to communicating with the team when he fired. Davis, a Navy captain, was much the same.
The other soldiers worked their weapons in near silence, only speaking to alert their teammates that they were swapping out charge packs. McAfee fired a blaster pistol he'd picked up before leaving the Chang, swore something at the incoming wraiths, and flung a grenade he'd probably forgotten to pull the pin on. It hit one of them and bounced around without exploding. The one it hit stopped, examined what had been flung at it in the middle of the barrage of fire, and caught a full burst in the torso from Greenhill.
Nearby, the wild man cracked off a shot at close range with his big cannon rifle. But down here, in almost pitch black, and with no NVG interface for his scope, the powerful weapon was all but useless. They could hear the electronic chitter of some kind of comm system on ambient. It made the savages sound like a swarm of angry dubstep locusts raging at one another about how they were going to kill their prey. But it also sounded almost human at moments, as though if you only could have slowed it down, you might have understood what was being communicated, if you'd once spoken every language Earth had ever known.
Captain Demacia got hit by return fire coming in from the savages. He doubled over and croaked, "Hit!" in obvious pain. Keeping low, the sergeant major left his weapon, pulled his sidearm, and fired back at the savages as he and McAfee moved quickly to Demacia's position.
"Got one in the leg,"
shouted a hyper McAfee. He switched from his pistol to the pulse rifle he'd been carrying and started firing back with psychotic abandon.
"Is it bad?" asked Demacia, who had rolled over onto his back.
"Nah," Andres said. "Got you in the meat of the quad. Bet it hurts like a bastard, though. Checking the artery now."
"It looks good, Captain."
Fire continued to come in hot and fast, ricocheting off the railing of the well they were covering in front of.
"Need a new pack,"
shouted McAfee as he ejected an empty. Evidently, he'd spent all his. Or perhaps he simply didn't know where they were.
Demacia groaned, fished one out of the LCE on his chest, and handed it up as the sergeant major set to work on the wound. Above them, the wild man stood tall, blazing away intermittently at any savages that dared to come close. He may not have been able to aim, but the fearsome roar of the weapon alone was enough to keep them back for the moment needed to attend to Demacia's injuries.
"All right," shouted McAfee. "You're good people, Captain."
Then he was cutting loose again. The sergeant major worked a self-adhesive smart tourniquet over the wound and activated the system. Without asking, he injected the captain with some chill.
"You're good to go, sir. Stay on the ground and provide cover," he said, handing the captain his rifle.
The firefight had gone wild, and it was looking like they'd set up in a bad place. Nowhere to fall back, and backs against the well deep inside the ship. Greenhill and Davis on the right got rushed. Davis was firing toward center, chasing a mover who kept shifting from desk to desk back in the main room, when Greenhill burned through a heavy charge pack on a cluster, getting ready to move up on them. In that same instant, an explosive was tossed and rolled right at them.
"Grenade!" shouted Greenhill as he let go of the heavy rifle's sling, stepped forward, and kicked the fragger off in another direction. A near-unseen blur tackled him with all the force of a truck, sending him crashing down hard, his weapon pinned between himself and the attacker. The two grappled for control. It was like wrestling with an invisible man, and a strong one at that. Both of Greenhill's hands were controlled by the powerful figure, so he tried to slam his helmet into what he thought might be the invisible opponent's head. But he missed, and the figure slowly moved him back to the edge of the balcony and bent him backward over the void. Greenhill felt his helmet slipping from the back of his head, felt his shoulders threatening to dip down as they inched away from the stabilizing balcony rail. It was a long fall to the bottom.
"Need help?" asked Davis as she engaged more, still busy acquiring targets, not realizing how dire Greenhill's position was. The savages were closing in groups, firing from cover, but unable to get a good angle on the defenders because of all the obstacles and partitions in the divvied-up office space. Grunted Greenhill as the invisible warrior lifted him up into the air. He knew in the next instant the savage was going to throw him over the edge. He slammed his knee into the thing's midsection, hoping it had a groin. And though the savage didn't so much as flinch, its stealth tech faded slightly. Greenhill could, for the first time, make out the shape of his assailant. Captain Davis let go of her primary, pulled her secondary, and capped two rounds in the soldier's head. The first round splashed brain matter out over the dark void of the well and shut off the thing's stealth camo completely. The second round was for good measure. The dead savage let go of Greenhill, who tumbled over the balcony railing, screaming. Davis only barely caught him by his LCE. Still, Greenhill was much larger and heavier, and in the next instant, they were both being pulled down by covetous gravity, with the very real possibility of going over together. Greenhill folded his legs at the same time that Davis kicked off from the balcony rail, and they both ended up rolling onto the floor in the middle of the hectic firefight. Two savages crouch-ran forward, light-bending and refracting off their armor in the green of night vision. And then the barrel of a wicked subcompact machine gun was pressing against Greenhill's dark, sweaty cheek. Another was against Captain Davis's midsection. One savage chittered frenetically, electronically, like several languages saying the same word over and over.
Kofuku! Upyof! Surrender! Istislam! Capitulacha!
And then something that sounded like a long string of ones and zeros spat out at a high speed. More savages rushed forward, charging through the gaps in the defenders' firing lines, now that Greenhill and Davis were down and gathering themselves. They chittered electronically at one another in their strange mishmash of ancient languages. Their active camo was switching off, revealing savages like the blue they'd put down beside the shuttle above ground. Martin swore, never ceasing to fire.
No surrender.
Savages went down at point blank. Wildman shot one in the gut and it doubled over, its intestines blown away in a dark spray. McAfee tore another to shreds by rushing forward and pulling the trigger on every shot in his charge pack until the thing was dead by multiple ventilations. But those who had pushed through on the right flank aimed their weapons at Greenhill and Davis. The one covering Greenhill screamed for the team to put their weapons down. It spoke like no normal human spoke and in 20 different languages, but its meaning was clear. Some of them, or all of them, were coming back as prisoners, and continued fighting meant the deaths of Davis and Greenhill. And then, from behind them, came a great roar, rockets flaring, wrecks
shot up from the depths of the well and hovered there, jump jets burning blue flame. He was holding a clamshell case and his hand cannon, and he was already firing at the savages even as he hung in midair. The first shot from the powerful sidearm vaped the head of the savage covering Captain Davis. The next two smashed into the rising chest of the one covering Greenhill. Rex bumped his jets and landed on the floor forward of the team, firing into the savages, who were now fleeing into the darkness. Their rush to take prisoners had cost them too many casualties to stand up to this new wave, this one-man reinforcement. The savages switched on their stealth tick again, but their active camo didn't deceive Rex's HUD. He could see them plain as day and didn't waste time putting rounds in everyone he could draw a bead on. The 50-caliber slug shot straight through the flimsy office workspace obstacles they tried to cover behind. Only a few savages made it out of there alive. In the silence that followed, Rex walked over to Captain Davis. She was lying on her back, breathing heavily, her face pale and sweaty. Rex pulled her to her feet.
"You okay?"
She wasn't hit. His armor diagnostics could tell exactly who'd been wounded, but she looked pretty shaken. Not many people survived close contact with the savages. She seemed to have a more acute awareness of that fact than most. She nodded quickly. "I'm fine. I'll be fine." Rex handed her the device they'd come for. Its clamshell carrying case was marked with New Vegas's highest security warnings.
"Here."
She smiled, but it wasn't a real smile. It had cost her too much to finally hold the object that she'd been sent for. 23 lives. 5 nightmare weeks she'd probably never forget. Her command and ship. Nor would hers be the last such price to be paid in the coming centuries-long war against the savages. Not by a long shot. Chapter 53. Captain Nemacha was slowing the team down. Even with another dose of chill, which seemed to make him incredibly happy, he was still only able to barely limp along. They didn't encounter more savages, but as they worked their way back through the ruined ship, Martin and Rex again took point, clearing the way in case the savages had set some kind of ambush for their egress. There was none of that either.
"Not a big fan of going back the same way we came in, sir," said the sergeant major when they made it back to the elevator to take them up level.
Rex had removed his helmet and was drinking water. It seemed even quieter than before down here, as though some show had gone on hours ago, and now everything had faded into the post-chaos silence that followed such major events.
"Know a better way out?"
"It's 0300, said Davis, "and this is the fastest way out."
Rex knew time was short. He also knew that he had 3 wounded and they were running low on charge packs. That was always the case. You never brought enough even when you thought you had. He'd alleviated part of that by redistributing what packs they had and issuing scavenged savage weapons. Many of them now carried their pulse rifles as well as matte black assault rifles, complete with integrated suppressor system and a bunch of 5.56 ammo. Rounds that he hadn't seen in general usage since Earth, and seldom after. The bigger problem was a more basic one. The team was tired. Rex could see it in the way they walked. They'd been up too long and fought too much, and a crushing fatigue had settled over the group. Rex turned to Davis. "Do you know a faster way back to the LZ?"
The captain bit her lip pensively, the second time Rex had seen her do so. "Outside the ship, in the tunnel complex. There's subway access for the commuters who worked under Hilltop. Private line. But ultimately, it has access to the main lines, and those crisscross just about everywhere under the city. We could get close to the stadium."
It was a way out. Not the same way they'd come in. Potentially faster than moving on foot above ground. They could divide up, Rex and them. He'd go back to the APC and take it down the main tunnel right up to the Savage Nest, drive in and det, and the APC was rated to handle the effects of a strike, at least for a time. He could put some distance between him and the blast
and let the stars fall wherever they chose to shine. Rex told them the plan a split second after deciding.
We're splitting up.
Davis, you lead the team down into the subway tunnels and make straight for the LZ. I'm driving the APC into the Savage Hulk alone.
No dice, sir, said the sergeant major plainly. Sweat was coming down his face. He hadn't done a shot of chill since he'd been hit.
Yeah,
said Greenhill, who'd almost just been thrown to his death.
We in it to win it, together, brother and sister, Colonel.
DeMacha laughed and waved it all off with a broad and generous sweep of his hand, never mind the gunshot wound in his thigh. He was a true Hispanian cavalier.
This, my friend, this is just a small scratch. I'm good to go, as the sergeant major says.
He laughed.
I still have both my hands. Stick a knife in my teeth. I'm, how does UW say it? Highly motivated.
We say that on Spallerza too, said Martin. But we came from the old Earth a long time ago, and yeah, I'm in it to win it, sir. We go all the way together.
All the way.
Long time since you heard that, thought Rex. And long ago, in another life, not this one.
He looked to the others, the question plain, the decision theirs.
The wild man said nothing, but his cold dark eyes urged that this killing go on forever and never end. McAfee was in, too.
This is some weird, wild stuff, huh, sir? I'd like to just get real high and see how it all comes out, he said.
He looked like a real killer now with a bandeau of spare charge packs, magazines, a pulse rifle on his hip, a blaster pistol tucked in his waistband, and a Savage assault rifle slung over his shoulder. And, of course, he was still shirtless and dirty.
I got what I came for, Tyrus Rex, said Captain Davis. The only way UW would be happier with me now is if I arrested you or shot you. They'd pin more medals than I have room for on my navy blues. But I said I'd see this out with you, and I'll take you there. So,
no one said anything.
There's still the subway after we drop the nuke, said McAfee.
It was a chance to see the other side of all this.
To maybe make the LZ in time to see the trigger nuke go off from orbit.
To see New Vega destroyed. A loss, but who really cared? The savages had already taken the world. The survivors, if you could still call them that, were stored in bubble freeze, doomed. Eventually, in the days, weeks, and years to come, to be unthawed and consumed.
Calories.
Then let's get going, said Rex.
Chapter 54. They returned to the APC via the same route that had taken them into the old starship, always expecting a textbook ambush that never came. The hunters, assuming there were more of them, had apparently gone back to their business. The stealth-kitted savages they had repulsed either hadn't reported contact or were off looking at another section of the massive complex. Or maybe they were still down in the ship. And McAfee was careful to keep his voice down. To Captain DeMarch's credit, he complained little, even though he was covered in a sheen of sweat by the time they made it back to the vehicle.
Sometimes, when there's nothing left to do but fight, he gasped as they loaded back in. Then, of course, you must fight.
But his pain-filled eyes showed that that fight was an excruciating one. In the APC, they were able to top off on charge packs and reload. DeMacha was moved inside to the gunner's position. Davis drove, and the rest rode up top. If they had to dismount to clear obstacles or enemies, they would do so under cover of the APC's gun. The APC had a laser sweep sensor system to augment local radar, plus low-light imaging for driving. But for everyone else, it was night vision, unless they were riding inside the red-lit interior. Davis called out the route over the comm as they drove. Entering main access tunnel now.
They passed gaping entrances into broad storage chambers and side roads that climbed in spirals or twisted down into the lower levels. Signs indicating directions, warnings, and locations passed by, but all of them were meaningless now. According to Davis, they were looking for Access Ramp 7.
Never would have guessed all this was under that hill we was up dying on yesterday,
Andre sighed into the comm. Should be just ahead, said Davis, slowing.
Contact, said Martin, who was hanging off the passenger's side.
The man's vision was sharp, thought Rex. Sure enough, just ahead was a wedge patrol of savage marines like the ones they'd fought on the surface, faceless and decked out in combat armor.
Looks like original recipe version, said Sergeant Major Andres. Not these new boys been showing up lately. Light 'em up, sir.
Davis brought the low flat APC to a halt after turning it slightly to the right to provide better cover. The men on top moved around to the side, putting the APC between them and the enemy.
Light 'em up, ordered Rex.
Damacha unleashed a fearful barrage of pulse fire from the deadly twin-barreled gun atop the APC. The savage patrol was cut to pieces within seconds. The barrels fell silent in the darkness of the tunnel a moment later.
Proceed,
said Rex once the kills had been confirmed. A few hundred meters on, Captain Davis found the ramp leading to the desired sublevel. It was narrow, the APC spilling out into the opposite lane as they moved farther in the darkness. A lone overhead light flickered on and off halfway along the ramp. The effect was more unsettling than comforting. Its very existence posed a question that couldn't be answered. Why was it on when everything else was dark? The path curved and became almost too narrow because of the vehicle's length. But finally, the APC emerged onto a wide subterranean road. The walls here were finished in pristine gray concrete, and all the lights down here were on.
How come these lights are on? Asked Greenhill.
Separate generators?
Offered McAfee.
There was no time to consider further. The APC had just started down this new tunnel when one wall dropped away, revealing a sheer drop with no guardrail, filled with the same bubble storage hives. Thousands of them, at least. And then Sergeant Major Andres swore.
Savvies!
From down the road, they were covering in narrow alcoves on the wall opposite the hives. Two ambush teams had already fired man-portable anti-armor rounds. Both rockets jerked up and down as they streaked down the roadway toward the APC. Damacha slammed his hand down on the APC's IR distracting flares, and they erupted from both front and rear of the APC and shot to the top of the tunnel, trailing burning phosphorus and smoke. It was the right move to avoid being hit by smart missiles, almost an instinctual move for the veteran tanker. But that burning phosphorus presented a serious problem for the men outside.
Move for cover, shouted Rex over the comm. Don't let that stuff fall on you.
Rex had seen that happen before, seen the way it just burned and burned, like it was trying to dig down to the very soul of the man the bright shining embers latched onto, and then burn all the way through to the other side.
Rex didn't know whether Captain Davis heard him or not, but she floored it, sending the APC surging toward the savages and taking the men out of danger of falling phosphorus before any of them had the opportunity to get off.
Now he concentrated on hanging on to avoid being thrown.
Going through, shouted Davis over the comm.
Half a second later, the APC reached the far end of the bubble storage devices on the left, and once more the tunnel was enclosed on both sides. Two of the savages ahead ran right out into the middle of the road, firing weapons on full auto. The APC smashed into one, crushing it beneath the forward right ceramic ball and clipped the other viciously.
The other savages stayed in their alcoves as they sprayed automatic gunfire wildly.
Rounds struck the APC close enough that Rex had to drop down behind its bulk to avoid getting hit. There was no opportunity to fire back. It required everything of those on the outside to merely hold on as they passed rapidly through the shooting gallery. But the turret controlled by Damacha did its part. The Hispanian captain raked the firing savages, the mounted gun doling out blistering death. And then the vehicle was past the ambush. for that's what it had to have been, an ambush. The savages had known they were coming.
Holy shit, panted Greenhill. Holy shit.
Did we lose anybody? Asked Andres. Anybody fall off?
We're good, Rex said, his HUD accounting for the life signs of each man on the team.
Miraculously, they had all survived the vicious gauntlet they'd just run.
Holy shit, Greenhill said again.
More ahead, shouted Davis. Another open gallery lay ahead off to the left, and alcoves to the right. Rex wondered at the thought of two such successive ambushes. Surely the savages weren't expecting something big enough and strong enough to punch through even the first one. Maybe it hadn't been an ambush after all. Maybe that had been an outer perimeter guard for what was happening here. Important work. The work of calories. Floating in the middle of this second gallery was a large dirigible, an airship, made of a mylar-like material, suspended underneath what looked like a field hospital. Utility trucks, probably commandeered from the new Vegans, were lined up in offloading racks of sedated survivors. Each rack was lined with cages holding the survivors, at least 20 per. They were being loaded onto a conveyor belt that was attached to the floating dirigible. Giant mechanical mandibles, like something from a child's nightmare of monstrous insects, were working on storage bubbles on the far side of the gallery, loading sedated humans into the packing chambers within the bubbles.
Hold your fire, shouted the sergeant major, sounding exasperated. We got survivors.
Savage Marines disobeyed the sergeant major's orders and kept shooting from behind the cover of the delivery trucks.
Do we help them?
Asked the Macha, smiling at the sergeant major's gallows humor in the face of the enemy. Bullets plinked against the APC's outer hull. The question required a split-second decision as Davis drove the APC at maximum speed, seeking to angle the vehicle so it took fire away from its outer riders who were hanging on for dear life on the narrow sideboards.
Negative, said Rex over the comm, his voice low and gravelly. Keep moving. Stay on mission.
A silence fell over the comm as the APC sped forward. Nobody liked what they had to do. Nobody liked any of it. Chapter 55. The savages had jackknifed a semi to block their escape a few miles ahead. Or maybe it had simply been left there weeks before when some panicked driver turned hard on the wheel in a desperate attempt to get away from the savage threat. However it got there, they weren't going to be able to drive through it. Davis applied all four brakes at once, and the APC fishtailed across the subterranean road before coming to a halt.
Sir, said Sergeant Major Andres, savvies have cut us off ahead. Count about 20 covering. They're just waiting for range and exposure.
Sensors are picking up more savages closing from the rear, the Macha announced from inside the APC. Maybe from that last gallery or one of the other entrances, I don't know, but they're moving.
Rex jumped down from the vehicle.
Martin, Greenhill, on me. Use the APC's gun to keep them off our backs while we clear the ones ahead.
The wild man went prone on top of the APC, deployed a small tripod, and fired his behemoth rifle at the distant savages covering behind the semi. He immediately dropped two of the exposed Marines and forced the rest behind the tractor-trailer's bulk. He scanned for glimpses of legs in the thin space beneath the trailer, then blew out a savage at the shin and finished it off with a rapid follow-up shot the moment the Marine hit the ground.
Nice work, said Rex, because it was nice work, some of the best shooting he'd seen in his years on the battlefield. The other men quickly dismounted. Above their heads, the twin-barreled turret began to fire to the rear. It sent long bursts to keep the enemy pinned, or at least to slow them down.
Charge for the turret gun wasn't a problem. As long as the vehicle had power, the gun would continue to operate. McAfee assisted, firing short-controlled bursts at closer targets beneath the turret's current range. Rex, Martin, and Greenhill fanned out into a wedge and approached the semi rapidly, covered by the wild man's impressive shots. Along the left wall was yet another gallery full of storage bubbles, all of them filled. Thousands of people floating in suspended amber waited for a nightmare in one of their tomorrows, not yet in a deep freeze, waiting to become calories. Rex made a knife-edged gesture with his gauntlet for both Martin and Greenhill to sweep left. Then he bumped the jets on his armor and shot toward the right side of the semi. As he neared the rear lift gate, he opened fire. He kept the hand cannon on auto-fire and ran it across all the savages on that side, hitting several, blowing off limbs and turning heads to gray mists of industrial fluid, brain, and helmet fragments. Return fire connected with his armor, bounced, and flung itself away into the tunnel dark. The blows were like jackhammer shots that forced Rex to cover back by the trailer's taillights. As tires blew and refilled with stabilizing emergency foam, he continued to the opposite side of the trailer, wanting to force any pursuing savages out into the open. He peeked back around the corner and saw the head of a pursuing savage Marine turn to mist. The wild man had landed a perfect shot at range on the newly exposed savages. A nasty shot pegged Rex hard in the chest plate, and he ducked back into cover and tried to catch his breath, sinking to a seated position. His armor plating sported a new dent and was still smoking. It would stand up to a lot, but it couldn't hold up against everything. Martin and Greenhill started murdering the savages from the other side almost the moment Rex was hit, overrunning the sole savage guarding the other Marine's flanks before lighting up the rest of the exposed enemy. Greenhill unloaded with everything the heavy assault rifle could spit out, and Martin followed, cleaning up strays, double-tapping any savages who hadn't yet dropped.
"Clear," called Greenhill once the last savage was down. Rex struggled to his feet. "Pull back and cover me."
He staggered up and into the vehicle's driver's seat. The ignition card had been left in the startup slot, and in moments Rex had gunned the accelerator and sent the big semi toward the subterranean canyon at the side of the tunnel. He leapt out seconds before the cab went through a barrier and over the edge. The hitch and connectors snapped, and with a cry of wrenching metal, the cargo container bent and teetered on the edge as the tractor idled into the abyss. Rex picked himself up from the road and stumbled back to the APC with Martin and Greenhill.
"You all right?" asked Martin.
Rex made a gesture indicating he was. McAfee was still holding position from behind the APC door, and he and the turret were engaging targets to the rear. Small bursts now, nothing sustained. The savages were being kept back.
"I think I can push through the opening you made for us," Davis said. "Hurry and get back on."
They hustled to the sideboards and unconsciously sucked in their stomachs as Davis squeezed the wide APC through the gap behind the dangling trailer, now only partially blocking the road. As they continued on, they encountered still more of the savage storage racks on the left side, pantries, refrigerators, little rooms crowding the road, waiting to be cross-loaded to the waiting hulk. And now the thousands of stored survivors were surely adding up to tens of thousands.
"Ma'am?" said Sergeant Major Andres.
Everyone was listening over the comm as the APC whipped through the darkness of the tunnel.
"How many of these rooms are there?"
She was silent for a moment. Only the bare hiss of the comm and the low menacing hum of the vehicle's engines could be heard. She was concentrating on the road, driving into the darkness ahead and following the images laid in front of her by the APC's sensors. When she spoke, it wasn't in her command voice, the voice she'd used to run a starship, and it wasn't in any other voice that she'd used among them yet. The voice that spoke was dead, devoid of all emotion, made lifeless by the horrors it had been forced to witness.
"I don't know," she said. "My guess is once they'd captured the major population centers, they started filling it from the bottom up. There may even be other storage sites in other smaller cities across New Vega. I'm not sure."
"They got the whole planet," Martin said, his voice hot. "Bastards. Took the entire populace."
Chapter 56.
Captain Davis brought the APC to a halt when the lights of another vehicle appeared far ahead, shooting out of the darkness of an intersecting tunnel. "Kill everything," she ordered. "Go silent." It was some kind of utility vehicle local to the New Vega military or police force, and right behind it followed a long line of civilian cargo and delivery trucks. A convoy. Savage Marines rode on top of the cargo and delivery vehicles, at least two or three per, automatic weapons at the ready, scanning the darkness to the sides of the route as each vehicle crossed the tunnel and disappeared on the other side. If not for Captain Davis's quick reaction, pulling over and going dark the instant she saw the growing illumination of the lead vehicle's high beams, they would have been spotted for sure.
"Wonder what that's all about," said Sergeant Major Andres over the comm, whispering in the darkness. No one said anything because everyone had a pretty good idea what the convoy was all about, who was in the vehicles, and where they were being taken. But it was Demacha, still under the influence of painkillers and chill, in high doses, who spoke for them all. "More survivors, headed to cold storage bubbles. Very sad for them." A morose silence passed over the comm net as they waited for the convoy to pass by.
"Each of those trucks must have room for at least 20, maybe 40 of those bastards who lost at hide-and-seek with the savvies," opined McAfee.
"Losers get eaten," said Greenhill sullenly.
As they watched, one of the convoy vehicles pulled over to the side of the intersection and slowed to a stop. Other vehicles slowed too, but continued on around. Two savage Marines were on top of the stopped vehicle, with a driver behind the wheel, a faceless savage. The driver slid out and began to kick the front of the vehicle where the engine compartment was.
"Break down," whispered Martin as he watched through his pulse rifle scope from alongside the APC.
"Must be," said the sergeant major over the comm. "Sep, what with a savage who's lived all his life in a big ship with all kinds of internal automated transport know about fixing a ground vehicle?"
"Or even how to drive one,"
offered Greenhill. Now the savage was tapping the various panels along the front of the truck. Based on the signage, the vehicle had once delivered bread. In a way, it still did.
"Those ships are big enough to be worlds inside," said Rex. "Towns and cities, and even roads."
"Well, if they don't get it started again, we'll have to either take them out or find another way around," said Captain Davis. Without a word, the wild man hauled himself to the top of the APC and crawled along its flat roof, dragging his big weapon forward. Before he'd been the wild man, before the years of wandering across the worlds and killing savages wherever he could find them, before all that, and all that would come, he'd just been some man with a name he didn't want to hear anymore. But he'd been her man. And that was enough. The night the savages came to Stendhal's Bet, the local broadcasts were filled with strange reports of settlements going dark, offline, incommunicado. Strange lights in the sky, fires and wrecks, shooting. Things that made no sense in those first few hours. Things that made all the sense in the world once the wild man had the endless hours to look back and replay each detail. They, him, her, and baby, lived in a farming collective out on the edge of civilization, or what passed for civilization on Stendhal. It was fall when the savages came out of the sky, late fall and winter coming on, evening dark making the vast spaces of that world cold and quiet. He often wondered if that was why the savages had attacked then, in fall, when it was cold. Deep space was cold and lightless. Maybe that was what they were used to. Maybe that was what was best for them. "We got to go into town, baby," she told him. They'd been sitting by the Satcaster, listening all day for reports, the few that came through, and the long drone of music on demand that filled the in-between times, waiting for information on what was happening. What could be done, what was true, and what was known. Later in the day, reports of fighting in the bigger cities around Stendal came in, and then those reports just stopped, and they waited as a cold afternoon turned to early winter evening. She made tea, then soup. The baby played on the floor of their stead. They only had so much juice for the generator. The stove in the kitchen and the light from their lamps kept them warm, or at least he was warm. She kept folding her arms and saying she was cold. And when the Satcaster network went dead, he took down the big rifle and began to clean it on the kitchen table. "We should go into town so we can talk to the others," she said. "Find out what in the world is going on." The dark blue of twilight came through their lone kitchen window. He stood and stared out at the silhouette of rolling plains and the few dark shapes of scraggly trees down near the river. They looked like fingers clutching at the winter sky, but the world inside the kitchen was bright, warm, and everything that home was supposed to mean. Death and danger and darkness would never come here. Not pirates, not armies, and certainly not savages. This world, this tiny world, was the opposite of all that they were. It was human. "They'll want to make a plan for whatever's happening," she continued. "Maybe an invasion. One of them confederacies, united worlds, trying to take us over. And you got skills from your time in the military, baby." He'd never told her. She'd just known. And of course there were the scars. But he never told her how he got those, either. In this memory, she's not the smoky, cool seductress of death that approves of his killing from high places. She's frightened. She worries, her favorite dish towel between her hands, pulling it through porcelain fingers. There is not the "do another one, babe" siren of snipers in this real moment inside the kitchen on the edge of night. Because it is the edge of night, in more ways than are understood at this particular moment. A darkness is falling, not just across Stendal, but across its chances and across the galaxy. The savages have finally come in from the outer dark between the stars. "I wish you'd say something." From the floor of the kitchen, the baby gurgles and shakes one of his toys. Her eyes fall to their child, and she looks back at him as he oils the bolt carrier assembly for the big weapon. "We have to do something." So they do. They dress in their warmest jackets, fleece and leather, gloves. The baby bundled in a blanket so cozy, you'd think it was protected from all the horrors of the galaxy. And they walk into town, him carrying the big rifle, her watching the prairie and the trees. The baby laughing, because he knows the world and the galaxy is only this, and that there are no savages. In town, they hear nothing new, nothing that hasn't already chewed at the back of their minds. But old Varney tells them, "It's savages, more likely than less. Invaders from another government would have been telling us to be peaceable by now."
"What will we do?" someone asks.
"Fight," answers the head man all call Varney. "It's all we can do now. We're too far out for other worlds to make it in time. Fight together, and we might last where others won't." On the long late-night walk home through the dark, they see no strange lights in the distance until they hear the roar of distant artillery out across the prairie or rocket strikes. The air is clear, and the altitude is just right. And so this might be happening hundreds of miles away to the north, near Gallup or even Crisco, where the big mag rail yards are, where the stock is driven in each season for off-world sale when the big lifters come in. The night changes colors with sudden flashes, white and green mostly, sometimes the flare of red or almost orange shimmering in waves like the northern lights. The savages are using their strange weapons, and the end of everything has come to Stendal. At midnight, they reach home, and an emergency flash text comes through from the rarely used global network.
She's putting baby to bed on that last of all homely evenings. He's started a fire in the fireplace. He stares at the text. It's a notice telling him he's being recalled to active duty. Report to Paradise City out near Farthing. The army will force an engagement with the savages and try to save the planet, or at least some of it, from the invaders. He has never been a man of words, so he just shows her the text and watches as she begins to cry. She cries because he must go. Like old Varney said, fight together. It's the only way. They make love. He wonders if either of them really wants to, but they do. Because it's the last time. The last night. The fire stocked and wood brought in so she won't have to go out again until daybreak. The baby safe in his crib. This house on the edge of the world is the last safe place in a galaxy descending into madness. After, her lying in his big arms, tracing the horrible scars he received the last time he was in the army, she says, "You won't let them take us." "No," he murmurs, fading, dreaming of any world for them, not this one, feeling the closeness of her beautiful body. "No, you'll be safe here," he tells her. "And I won't let them take you." He feels her take a breath, one breath, as if there is nothing more to the galaxy than that single perfect breath that says, "Life. Live. You must." She trusts him. "Promise?" she asks him.
"I promise. I promised."
He whispered to the big rifle, with his chin and face in the usual place, eye 2 inches back from the scope. Then he breathed and pulled the trigger as he let go of the air. One of the savages atop the distant bread truck exploded from the sternum up. The massive 20-millimeter round just ruined him. These were the wild man's most special loads. They disintegrated everything they hit as the round fractured inside the target and exploded in every direction at probably 600 to 800 miles per hour. There was no way to know, really. That was just his guess. The concussive boom filled the subterranean tunnel, echoing and reverberating across the deep and hollow spaces of the way-down dark beneath the corpse of New Vega City. Round ejected, and everyone shouting over the comm, shouting both, "Who fired?" and an instant later when their minds caught up with their mouths, "What's he doing?" In the same horrible moment of everything going off the rails, the reticles inside the wild man's scope found the other Marine, whose only move had been to stand now that his comrade had just disintegrated from the waist up. The savage Marine had just jerked his rifle up to start engaging targets it couldn't detect when the wild man fired his next round. This one went low but still connected. It blew the leg off the Marine at the hip, taking a good chunk of the groin with it. The savage promptly went helmet forward and over the side of the truck, landing on the road at the exact wrong angle if one didn't want to have a broken neck. Who knew what that did to these things? They didn't.